We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Central Time. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Jeff Bossert, sitting in for Celeste Quinn. The producer for the program is Harriet Williamson. Our technical director is Henry Frayne. Today's guest dog trainers Jim Keel and Carol Inholm in for their monthly program, the first Friday of the month. They're here to take your questions on dog training and dog behavior or anything else, I guess, dog-related. Jim and Carol are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. Jim and his wife, Robin, raise Malamutes, and Carol has two dogs, a golden and doodle. Welcome. Good to have you back in the studios.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Nice to meet you today.
Nice to meet you. How are your dogs doing?
It's fall.
Yeah.
The Malamutes are starting to get more active.
Well,
they
just
don't like the heat.
I rely on mine as an alarm clock, but they don't want to get up in the morning either, so they just snooze away. It's dark, it's chilly, and
yeah, the sun doesn't come up till 7 now.
No.
Very annoying.
I hate fall.
I love fall.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
Winter, I'm already looking forward to December 26th when the days start to get longer.
Well, it's actually December 22nd, but
okay.
Close enough.
Well, that's close.
That's Boxing Day that you're talking about.
How do your dogs take to, you know, out fall weather?
They're much happier when it's cooler, much happier. But it wasn't very hot this summer.
Right.
The humidity is what they don't like. It's, I don't know. They're happy.
The males just don't like it when it's warm, and we could leave them out for hours, and they'll exercise for 5 minutes and then lay under a tree for the rest of the time. Now, a little cooler, they're starting to get frisky, and when the snow falls, they'll be playing in it like children.
We had a nice walk last night. You know, nice. It was, of course, my timing wasn't that great because I thought the storms were over, so we got caught about halfway from home. But, no, the walks are nicer.
How far away is halfway from home?
Well, I know how far it is.
I was halfway from
home. Oh, I've opened myself up twice already in the first 3 minutes for his ridicule.
If you have any questions or comments about dog care and behavior, et cetera, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455, Jim and Carol are welcoming your calls. How are classes going? A month ago, I listened to a bit of the program from last month with Celeste, and it sounded like you had a full slate of
We are very busy with classes. We're going into our fourth week, I believe. Yeah.
Fourth week.
This coming week
is the fourth week.
But we found something. I find this so fascinating that we started offering classes on late Sunday afternoon, early evening. And they're immensely popular.
Yeah.
And I just find that odd because I'm not one to really want to do anything on Sunday night, but these classes are just packed and it's great.
And is this the home companion?
We have a clicker class on Sunday night and a sub-novice class and a home companion class. And they're all full.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And our Tuesday morning classes.
Tuesday morning classes are very popular. So the only night we don't offer a class is on Friday evening
and
Saturdays. So the place is pretty busy all the time.
How long do the classes go on? I mean, how many weeks?
Ten weeks.
Okay.
And then we have short courses that are 3 or 4 weeks in length. And it's just,
special things like the short courses
we had a retriever training course and, what else?
Attention.
And then we had one, and I hope we do it again, but we didn't get enough people. We were offering a class in freestyle, which is dancing with your dog.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yes. Freestyle is very much fun.
Well,
give you something to Google when we leave.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, maybe I'll Google it right now. Maybe I'll. Yeah.
Oh, there's some fabulous.
If you Google it, you go to YouTube.
There's one out there. There's. And it made me cry because it was a young
girl. You cry all the time.
Well, it certainly. It was a young girl, and I think she had a border collie, and it was the British version of what's that show that I can't stand to watch?
Crufts?
No.
You've Got Talent?
Yes. We don't call it You've Got Talent.
The British American Idol.
That's it. Thank you, American Idol. And it was just so beautiful to watch. It really and truly was.
So was the dog actually a contestant?
The team. They were a team.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of walk around and walk backwards and do and dance steps. And the dogs, sometimes they stand up.
You should Google it now.
Okay.
It's so beautiful
right,
to watch.
Go. Let's go to the web.
So anyway, yeah, and I don't know, what would we call that?
That takes a long time to train, though. I don't think.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to do a short course.
But she was
a
young woman. And it was just a beautiful
I believe years ago, back in the 80s, we had one night, we were trying to see if we could get it going, but we had square dancing with your dogs, which is a whole lot easier because all the dog is doing is healing. And square dancing is, at its basic level, easy to learn.
Do-si-do, isn't that a step?
Well, there are some basic steps that are easy. There are a lot that are hard, but the basic stuff's you can learn pretty quick, and we had a night, and everybody had fun, but it kind of died out fairly quickly.
Look at there. He's getting it up already.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Whereas, audio in the studio, unfortunately. No speakers.
That's her, it's her border collie.
Jen, the dancing British dog.
Oh, yeah. It's just beautiful. Well, so anyway.
And now since it's radio, we'll describe. We'll be.
But I remember sitting at my desk. Somebody put the link out. Our dog training club, we have an email list, and somebody sent that link out. And so I'm sitting there watching it, and then all of a sudden, and it's nothing sad. It was just so beautiful to watch.
We don't want you drawn to tears in the studio.
No, I won't.
So I might have to click off this video.
Oh, it's happened before.
Usually I can deal with it if I watch it a second time. But that gives you a good idea of what freestyle dancing is. It's about the epitome of it. And then there was Carolyn and Rookie, and I think everybody's seen that, Golden Retriever. And they danced to, the most popular one was Grease. And he died just a few months ago, I think, or maybe a year ago. You know who died that made me, I met this dog, Dave the Math Dog. Have you ever heard of him?
No.
Okay, so I got to meet Dave the Math Dog, and it was kind of like Clever Hans, the horse that could count. And he did the same thing, but I'll tell you, in all honesty.
But he did it in base five?
I watched the man that owned Dave, and I could not figure out how, there he is, how that was occurring, how he did it. He could add, subtract, multiply, square root. I know he could.
Square roots.
He
That's
did
great.
Square roots. So, but, you know, at an intellectual level, you realize that dogs cannot determine square root, but they had this down so perfect that. And I studied him, and he did it for like half an hour. But he just died. He had cancer. It was so sad.
August 15th, it says on this website. I found.
Yeah. And I met his son. I met the dog, Dave's son. So I don't know. He lives right around here.
Is he a spelling champ? Or?
No, he's in training. But they live down in Arcola or somewhere.
Oh, locally.
Yeah, he's local. He was at the Champaign Library this summer.
There was a cattle dog that's on the internet that had some similar talents. And, boy, I can't remember. He has an unusual name. A guy in Texas has been on Oprah and things like
that. Oh, I know. Skid Boot.
You're right.
Skid Boot. That's pretty amazing, too.
Mm-hmm. We are.
So then you watch these things. You watch these people that have worked with, like, Skid Boot. If you Google Skid Boot, it's almost amazing. And then I think, I can't even walk mine without being pulled.
You could Bing it, too. Let's give everybody and Yahoo it. And what else is there?
Google's just become the Kleenex and Xerox of the
Skid Boot, SKIDBOOT, the dog.
That's it.
There's plenty of YouTube links for that one as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty remarkable. He was on Oprah.
He was on Oprah. He's been on TV a lot.
Shall we talk about Chicago not getting the Olympics?
I'm of two minds, you know, because we go through Chicago a lot to get to Wisconsin, and not in the summer so much, so it might not have affected us. But all I could think of is we're going to have to go to Iowa and then to get to Wisconsin.
I really was shocked. I don't know. I guess I expected that it would just happen. It didn't.
Once again, the phone lines are often awful slow.
We like
right
to
now.
Talk about dogs more than Olympics.
Well, and if you have a
unless they have a dog Olympic event,
yeah. If you have any, we've been talking a little bit about some websites, some specifically YouTube videos of dogs. If you want to suggest one or have any other calls, questions about dogs, 217-333-9455 or 800-222-9455. We're talking with Jim Kuehl and Carol Lindholm from the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. One thing you mentioned, Jim, last month was the water skiing stance that some dog owners are in because they're fully prepared to have the dog nearly rip the arm out of the socket when you're walking.
Well, in fact, there are very few dogs that can rip arms out of sockets. I had one, but he was a weight pull trained dog, and that was the kind of reaction I wanted. I didn't want him not to pull. But if you're trying to train a dog to walk on lead, my theory is that people are afraid to hurt the dog. So when the dog starts to pull, they start walking with the dog to loosen the tension on their neck. And what the dog learns is if I pull,
we go faster.
We go.
I get to where I want to go
and
sooner.
The way to get around that is to just stand there and let the dog pull all they want. They're not going to hurt themselves unless they're a really dumb dog like a Malamute. And sooner or later, they're going to stop pulling and look at you and say, hey, what's the deal? And as soon as they ease up on the tension, you start walking. So the only way they get to walk is if they're not pulling.
It works.
It works within minutes.
We actually have a caller on the line. If you two would put on your phones, line one in Champaign, go ahead.
Hello there. Yes, I wasn't quite sure, but I remember Skidwitz, and that dog was absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that it was many years ago, and I don't know if he's still performing or even if he's alive. Check on that?
The videos are from a fairly long time ago.
Skidboot, they're all I'm seeing here is from 2006.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think he's still alive. I think we'd all know if he died.
That's awesome, man. That's great. Well, he must be getting up there in age, but he's a remarkable dog.
Oh, yeah, he was a great dog.
And then the one from Mask, too, I thought he was pretty cool.
Oh, guess what?
What?
He died in 2007.
Oh, no.
He was born in 1992.
See, that's the one they should have cloned, you know.
Yeah.
I'll get off. You guys have a good day, all right?
Well, now that's depressing.
Yeah, there were a couple of probably a few YouTube links, and then I found skidboot.com that talks about some photos and movies on here.
He was around 15. That's a goodish age for
a
dog.
Long life. So, Jeff, I see you have one of my favorite books over here, the Dogs for Dummies.
I left it open, and I was just searching through before the show, and if I were to go out and have a dog right now, that dog's growing up on a farm area in rural Illinois. But Living with Your Dog, Chapter 11, Basic Training. And I specifically left it bookmarked on getting the dog's attention. And I guess there's some information here on eye contact and trying to get him to look or watch.
There are exercises. Yeah, as we talked about the short course on attention, actually food is the easiest way to get a dog to look at you. You just hold and it's a really simple exercise. I complicated it a little bit.
I liked what you were doing in your class this week. I was watching the more advanced version of teaching a dog to watch.
It's not advanced. It's just more complicated. But you just in each hand, you take a piece of food, you show it to the dog, and you hold it outstretch your arms either side, and the dog... The reason I like to do that is the dog keeps looking back and forth, and they keep looking at the food. And sooner or later, the dog's going to get tired of this and look at you and say, where's my food? And as soon as they look at you, bam, you give them one of the cookies. and then you take another cookie and you do it again, and the dog, of course, will look back and forth again, and sooner or later look at you. You give them the cookie, and it only takes. Within 5 minutes.
Monday night. Who did you have?
Candy.
Candy. Candy's picked up on that pretty good.
Candy's been the most resistant to that technique. The other dog I'm training right now, Kurt, I think I taught him in 2 minutes. But Candy still thinks.
I was watching her.
The problem is they're both show dogs. So when Robin was training them for confirmation showing, you take the food and you hold it up, and the dog is supposed to look at the food, put mm-hmm. their ears up, and look alert. And when they do that, that's when they get the food. So I'm fighting against that, trying to untrain her and say, don't look at the food.
With sitting, too. Because when you have a show dog, they stand.
Yeah.
They can't sit in the ring.
That's the problem with using food. There are a lot of problems with using food, not the least of which is if you have a show dog and you tell them to sit, you show them the food, they jump in front of you and set themselves up four square. They put their head. No, that's not what I want. I want you to sit. No, no.
No, I know what I'm supposed to do.
I spent the last 2 years with you telling me to stand. I'm not going to sit.
I had a wonderful little Shih Tzu in class last session who was a Finnish champion.
Oh, yeah, I know the dog.
Love that little dog to pieces. And she got it done. You know, she understood.
It's best if you train them to do both at the same time mm-hmm. instead of one because Candy's really good at other things. Other problems with food, you're asking. Jim, you said there were several things.
Well, go right ahead.
Yeah, the big problem with food is you drop it all the time. And what mm-hmm. happens is the dog sees the food on the floor and picks it up off the floor, and it's self-rewarding. And then you get a dog when you're walking them or you're trying to heal with them, and they got their nose on the ground all the time. Mm-hmm.
This happens in class quite frequently because if you don't drop your food, the person next to you is going to drop food.
And in fact, I've stuck food in a dog's mouth and it hit the ground, you know. So it's virtually impossible not to drop food at some time or another. So what you have to do then is train the dog not to go for food on the floor.
Actually, teaching the dog attention is the first thing that we do.
Mm-hmm. And that's it's an attention exercise. Mm-hmm. You put food on the floor and then have the dog look at mm-hmm. you.
You can't do anything if they're not paying attention to you. I mean, it just makes such clear sense, but it's something that we talk about every week.
Every week.
333-9455 or 800-222-9455 if you have a question on dog training, dog behavior for Jim Keel or Carol Lindholm. Can dogs with the, I guess, you know, big serious question here, can they carry any illnesses that we're afraid of now, H1N1? Is there any threat of that? Because
I got an email this morning about that. No.
Okay.
There are diseases that they can carry.
Those zoonotic diseases, yeah. But no, not H1N1.
But there are very few plague-type diseases that they carry that we can pick up.
Are these unusual, the ones that they can?
They can carry
rabies?
Rabies, that's one thing.
I can't think of anything. Worms.
What's the thing you get from mosquitoes, not malaria?
Heartworm.
No.
West Nile.
West Nile.
There you go.
They can carry West Nile, I think.
I don't think it's transmissible to us. I don't know.
Well, they can't transmit it to us, but they can. If I had West Nile, I couldn't give it to you except through a mosquito.
Okay.
Unless you took some of my blood and shot it up.
Also, yeah, certainly, because dogs can get mosquito bites. And, mm-hmm.
Squirrels.
Yeah. Let's see, something else that, while we're on the subject of illness, what kind of, I don't know, what this time of year, what kind of things are you most concerned about with maybe your cooler temperatures, dogs?
Outdoors? You know what always is a problem that people don't really think about is antifreeze. You know, that's a big. Because antifreeze smells so bad, I think it's the most vile smell on the planet. It's hard for me to fathom why a dog would drink it or eat it or lick it up or whatever.
Because it tastes so good. Mm-hmm. The other thing is dogs eat things that smell a lot worse than...
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, that is true. But that's a problem that people need to be aware of. And
they're getting away from using the whatever the very deadly stuff was, because it's also deadly to people. It's
right.
Not just dogs.
Who would drink radiator fluid or antifreeze or whatever?
You know, we had an incident. We had five dogs running loose.
Oh, I remember this story.
And one of them came in with an ancient.
Because you'd never even seen it before.
We'd never seen it. We, you know, had bought the place, and there was an old barn, and it was full of junk. And we had gone through it. We had some environmental classes go through it a couple times. Couldn't find anything. The dog found it. And it was an ancient – it was a cardboard container instead of the plastic we have now, so it had to be like 25 years old, of antifreeze. And one of the five dogs came in. One was carrying the can. So we rushed everybody to the U of I. And we tested one dog. He was clear. Tested the second dog, and he had the antifreeze in him. It's a fairly simple treatment, but you have to catch it in time. Now we had three or four other dogs. They only had one more test. So it's kind of Sophie's choice. Who are we going to test? But then they found some more. So we tested everybody.
Something that was in the New York Times, I don't know if you can address, from just a few days ago, MRSA is becoming a big problem for veterinarians, not just dogs, but cats, birds, pigs, rabbits, rodents. It's becoming a hazard to humans who own or spend time with some of these animals. I don't know if you'd heard any stories or
no,
aware.
I hadn't heard that. I don't know any people with MRSA.
This is a Times article from September 22nd. But they say it's unknown how often pets play a role in human infections by this by the disease. But physicians and vets do not routinely trace those infections to their source.
What's MRSA?
That's that skin thing.
I don't remember.
It's like an infection in your skin or something. It's like the fleshing bacteria. Something very awful that you don't ever want.
Well, one thing you can get from dogs is mange, sarcoptic.
Sarcoptic, not Demodex.
Not Demodex. Not, no, you can't get that.
Yeah, sarcoptic. That's right.
We got mange mites from a dog that had an operation, was on steroids, and his immune system had.
What's the other thing that you can
gone
get?
Down?
Ringworm.
Ringworm, I was thinking of ringworm.
See how very few things we can get from our animals? I mean, you're better off living with animals than going to work every day, because everybody's going to be sick all winter and every week anyway.
Well, I'll try to relate some outside of illness concerns or something that Tom Rogers suggested to me that I'd ask you about today is that we see a growing number of pet sitting services. Do you have any advice there of what maybe people should look for?
You should not sit on your pets. Okay? They're not strong. They're not really made for it.
Why did you make me laugh? It's not even funny.
But, you know, if you have a lot of crazy work schedules and
well, it's pet sitting service as opposed to like doggy daycare and home daycare. A lot of people don't want to board their dogs, and they'd rather have someone come in and walk them and feed them and so forth. I don't have any real issues with it, but.
Well, some dogs, you know, if you're boarding them and they're in a kennel is very stressful.
Yes, it is.
If the dog isn't used to it. And they can pick up associated diseases fairly easily, stress-related diseases pretty easily. Whereas if they're at home, all they have to deal with is one stranger. And if you introduce them, then it's not a stranger. So I think pet sitting services can be very beneficial.
As long as they're reliable. I remember a horrible story from a couple years ago. A friend of mine had someone that was going to come in and take care of her Goldens while she was gone for the weekend. She never did. She never showed up. They were crated.
This kind of reminds me of, well, it's Christmas and everybody is full of joy and peace and happiness, but are you going to cut yourself on the wrapping paper? Seven dangers in Christmas.
You have to make certain that the pet sitter is reliable.
We bring up, you know, boarding dogs or pet sitting, whatever. I mean, last few years have to have been a growing number of people in the military who, you know, have to figure out what to do with their dogs when they're deployed. I bring this up because my brother was overseas for a few months. Luckily, he had family he could leave his hound with.
Oh, I remember Jim and I have both been very involved with the Humane Society, too. We were both on the board of directors. But I was out there, oh, my gosh, it was several years ago. And a woman came that, and with her dog, and she was being deployed. And it was the most heartbreaking thing because she didn't know what, none of her family would take the dog. She was going to be gone for a year and a half. She was going to Iraq, and I cried, obviously. And so she left the dog with us, and he'd be put up for adoption. And later that same day, she came back because her mother said she would take care of the dog after all. And she got her dog back. So, but that's, unfortunately, unless you do have family, you couldn't afford to board a dog for a year and a half.
Right.
So it's one of the consequences that our military people have to deal with, a sacrifice they have to make that we don't think of often.
What about, we talked about dog sitting, boarding. What about professional dog walkers? I don't know.
Well, you see more of those in the really big cities.
Right. I don't, psychologically, how does I don't know, affect your dog, or does it?
I've never seen professional dog walkers. I've seen pictures or things on TV, and they've got like 8 or 10 dogs. And my thought always is, I hope they don't start fighting. 7 things to worry about at Christmas. We got all
these
dogs. Yeah. All these dogs. And if I walked 7 Malamutes, I guarantee there would be a fight of some kind.
It gives the owner some – we're fortunate in this community if you live within the confines of the community. And you can be home in just a short 10, 15 minutes at most and go home and let your dog out during the day. I have I know it's not possible, but personally, I could not leave my dogs home alone all day long from the time I leave until I come home in the evening. So that's one of the benefits of living in a community this size. I could run home at lunchtime and let them out and make sure everything's okay, make sure they've got fresh water, that everybody's still alive, and then go back to work without any concerns. But not everybody's able to do that. You couldn't do it because you've got a long drive home.
Well, I was just thinking when I used to live up in Chicago and work in the steel mills, I lived a lot closer to where I worked than I do now, but it took 4 or 5 times longer to get to work than it does now.
Yeah.
Welcome your calls and questions on dog
today?
Care. We are merely
having fun in the sun.
Yeah, I've listened to the show many a times and usually get a flood of calls. We've had one caller earlier in the hour.
And then we had to give him bad news. It's getting
bad. Yeah. 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Phone lines are ready for your calls for Jim or Carol on dog behavior, dog training, et cetera.
Maybe Carol could say something controversial.
Yes.
You're the one that does that.
Okay, golden retrievers are dumb.
Jeff, what? You didn't notice my attire.
I honestly did not.
Yes, this is my favorite piece of attire in the entire world. And it's got golden retriever puppies on it. It's fleece.
And they're upside down.
And they're upside down, so I can see them. Actually, this is a mistake, and this is why they were on sale. But I would find one of these ever again. It's like 15 years old.
Yeah, it's fleece.
I've already had to have the zippers been replaced, and I just love it.
Those things are hard to replace.
I could find it on eBay.
You're finally at the time of year you can wear it.
I know. I love it.
We have a caller.
So, we have two.
We do have two. We have line one in Champaign at the moment. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question about dog breeds. I have parrots, and I'm looking to adopt a dog, but I don't know what kind of dog breed might be best to get with parrots.
A real small one.
A real small one. Because my parents have a Yorkie, and she's real, you know, she just grabs stuff and shakes it, you know, so I don't want to get.
what kind, since the parrots are little to big, what is it, what kind of parrots are you?
Well, I have 2 parrotlets, they're little green birds, and then I have a sun conure, which is a sort of a medium-sized parrot, smaller, and I might adopt an African gray.
I think the parrots will make sure the dog leaves them alone.
What, yeah. If I can suggest it,
not a terrier.
Yeah, definitely not a terrier.
Well, you know, life is merrier with a Yorkshire Terrier. I've kind of heard it said, but a puppy is. I usually don't recommend puppies, but you get a puppy, have the parrots peck him and or her, and
they scream and yell.
Exactly, and
that's what they'll do.
And the puppy becomes afraid of them, and then will for the rest of his life respect them. It's also how you introduce dogs to cats. The cat beats them up when they're a puppy, and when the dog gets bigger, they really don't realize that.
A friend of mine has a cockatoo, which she got after she had the dogs, and the dogs are terrified because when the cockatoo gets afraid or whatever, but his little crest comes up on the top of his head, and he squawks, and the dogs are like, "Oh my God, what is that?"
But the problem is this. For the last, 3 or 4 million years, dogs have been eating birds. And we didn't breed the dog, but somebody from Springfield, Illinois, called us, and they had some sort of exotic bird, and they had a Malamute. I think they got it from their son who had gone into the military. And so we're trying to give them some advice, but they ended up placing the dog out because the bird was on their shoulder and the dog just jumped up and grabbed it. That's why I said a short.
You're telling this girl the story?
I am. I'm not sugarcoating it. If you get a bigger dog,
yeah.
the parrots won't be safe. I just wouldn't trust a bigger dog unless you're around and unless you plan to stay at home all the time. I would get a small breed kind of dog. And you know,
Golden Retriever would be a nice choice.
No, I would say a French Bulldog.
Oh, that's a good choice. That is a good choice. Yeah. I like them.
Frenchy.
Caller, are you still on the line? Anything you want to follow up with? I think we're going to move on. Caller on line 2 in Urbana. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, based on that last conversation, I wanted to mention it also matters whether or not the birds are clipped or not and whether or not they're fed.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That'll make a huge difference, and clearly not a bird dog.
Unless they have a soft mouth.
Right. Very soft mouth. If you keep their wings clipped and just don't keep them in the same room, that'll help a lot.
Yeah, just keeping the animals separated is, to me, the best thing. It'd be very difficult to train a dog, an adult dog, not to chase a bird.
Absolutely. You know? Even puppies. I've got a very gentle puppy who just was always excited about the birds,
mm-hmm.
And she doesn't attack anything.
Well, dogs don't call them birds; they call them lunch.
Right. Well, and that's my. I had cats who were afraid of the birds.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of birds do you have?
I had a couple of lovebirds.
Oh.
Yeah. One was relatively wild, and she was the one who trained the cats to be fearful.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one was hand-fed, and she didn't know any better and would play with the dog and cats, given the opportunity. So, when I heard that, I thought, uh-oh. Yeah, it's very risky, and for the bird's sake, I would...
We have a man in our dog training club who he doesn't raise birds now, but several years ago he raised budgies,
mm-hmm.
and very successfully. And he has he had goldens, but he always had 3 or 4 dogs, and never had any incidents. But he kept them apart, and never the twain met. So I think that's what you have to do.
We got, I believe still line, I'm being told we have I think we still have a caller on the line. Perhaps not. Anything else you want to, caller line 1, okay. Thanks, Henry. Go ahead. Line 1 from Champaign?
Yes.
Go right ahead.
I'm calling to tell you that it doesn't necessarily have to be a small dog.
Mm-hmm.
I had a Doberman Pinscher that never bothered our bird, never, not even when the bird flew around the room. So I think if the dog is trained to
did your dog grow up with the birds from a puppy on? No?
No, but we had lots of different pets, and we had small children, and the dog was smart, and he was able to learn what was important to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has to be a smart dog, and it has to be a dog that can think for itself and reason things out. And he was very, very smart. So I would think that some of the smarter dogs, some of the guard dog types, might be okay because their instinct is to guard your property. And he regarded the bird as our property.
That makes perfectly good sense to me.
I would think that you obviously got lucky. The woman I described with the Malamute in Springfield wasn't lucky. But
Malamutes aren't guard dogs.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And it might be a good idea if somebody wants to adopt a dog as an adult to bring it home and see what it does with the birds before they make any commitment.
Right. Right. I would say so.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
He was raised with lots of small children and lots of other small animals in the household.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was used to having to tolerate and set aside his instincts, I think. But then he was also very protective and very smart, figured things out for himself very quickly.
I think
he wanted an intelligent breed.
I think you make a good point on the guardness. Once the dog figures out that the birds are part of the family, probably they come under his guardianship, and mm-hmm. he's not going to hurt them. It's that awkward time before the dog realizes that you might have a problem.
Got a caller on line 3 in Champaign. Got a couple of callers left, so go ahead on line 3.
Hi there. I've been trying to teach my dog a new trick. She's very smart, and I just can't seem to get her to... I'm trying to get her to nod when I say, do you want a biscuit?
Oh, okay.
And I didn't know if you had any tricks on teaching your dogs tricks.
I just had a little image pop in my head of taking the biscuit and waving it up and down in front of her face so she follows it with... Well, I'm doing it myself, aren't
yeah.
I?
She's already taught herself to nod.
And take the biscuit and have her nod... And then use that word, and then just do that over and over, and then eliminate the biscuit and eliminate the hand. And
yeah, it's going to be hard to eliminate the hand. What do that and make sure when the you hold the biscuit high and get it low under their dog's nose. But I wouldn't say nod until the dog is mm-hmm. is actually nodding,
mm-hmm.
and then you add the command so the dog. In other words, if you say nod when you're moving your hand up and down, the dog might think nod means I'm going to move my hand up and down.
Okay.
So until the
I have been moving the biscuit up and down, but I guess not far enough because she would just start following it with her eyes.
Yeah, you want to get it below her nose so she the thing about dogs, as you've already noticed, is relative to us, they have their eyes on the top of their head. So you can go from in front of them to directly over them, and they don't have to move their head to follow it. So you want to get that below their nose so they have to nod in order to see it, and then get it back behind them so they have to raise their head.
All right.
Give it a try, a bit of work.
Yeah. Sounds like an interesting
thing. I saw the best trick ever, and I want to know how to teach it. She said to her dog, are you feeling sick? And the dog sneezes.
Wow.
I was thrilled with
that. That's amazing. We got a call on line 2, Champaign. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is appropriate for you all or for a veterinarian, but my dog, how should I put it? She holds her pee for incredible amounts of time, and we'll go for walks, for example. You know, go to bed like 9 p.m. and she's gone for her pee. And then the next morning it'll be 7, you know, 5, 6, 7 in the morning we'll go for a walk. And she just is so excited by all the things she's seeing that she doesn't pee. And, I mean, it can go on until about noon, and then she finally pees, you know. And I'm pretty sure she's not going anywhere. I've kept a pretty good eye on her. And so I'm thinking, like, is this okay? number one. Number two, I mean, I'm not too happy about that because I'm always worried about whether she's going to go or not. And she's very excitable, you see. And so it is perhaps related to that. But I'm just worried that it's, you know, maybe dangerous, you know, that she's not.
You can talk to a vet about it. I don't think there's any – I've never heard of any related illness. But I have had dogs because we do a lot of confirmation showing, which means we go out of town a lot. And we've had – I remember Ross, our dog Ross, he wouldn't pee or poop
the whole time
from Friday until Sunday night. And he's a male marking, but he just wouldn't do it. And I think the thing to do if you have the time to invest is take your girl outside and, as we were talking about a little earlier, just stand there. And you may have to wait, you know, a half an hour, but sooner or later she's going to pee.
And then call it something.
And as soon as she has done peeing, start your walk. All right? So it'll take a little bit of training, but she will learn that the only way she gets to go for a walk is if she pees.
Or say, while she is eliminating.
Yeah, you give her some sort of word.
Go potty or something so she knows what she's supposed to be doing. Or make it something more mature. I think go potty drives me crazy.
Make it something unusual because usually if I would say good girl, but then if she comes in the house and jumps on your lap and you say good girl, you might have a problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for the call. And line one in Urbana, go ahead.
In reference to the birds, I once had a border collie, and one fall a goose became resident with the herd of cattle. I think it may have been injured, and the border wasn't very happy about it, but when she was told very firmly she couldn't attack it, she got the idea that it was part of the herd, and she tried her best to ignore it, which wasn't exactly easy. But even when we weren't around, apparently, she would never bother it. So I think if you do have a trainable dog, and even a fairly large dog, an intelligent animal, you can probably train it to not harm a parrot.
Oh, I agree.
I wonder if you could teach the parrot to say down.
Sure you could.
or sit or roll over.
Sure.
The reason I said small dog was so they couldn't jump up and grab the bird out of the perch or have it
I would think
by.
If you had birds and you're introducing a dog into your home, it would be wise to leave your birds in their cage for a while until the dog accepts the fact that he knows there's something living in there. He knows what, you know, and it takes away some of that mystique.
And the dog can
out.
Sniff them and get used to what they are before he sees them. But there are just some dogs, and I think one of the women mentioned a hunting dog. Boy, if they see a bird flying, they almost can't help themselves. You know, they're going to leap up and grab it.
Well, but no, I don't – do you think so necessarily? I mean, like pointers, they point. Can you see this poor pointer just on point? 24/7 in the house.
Or disappoint.
So.
We got one more caller to hope to get into here. Line three in Champaign. Go right ahead. Hello, line three.
Hello.
Hello. You're on.
Yeah, could you please turn your radio down? Radio down because we're getting some.
That's what
feedback.
That was.
Feedback.
Yes. Feedback. Go right ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I have a dog that's a 12-week-old harrier.
Oh, my.
Harrier or terrier?
Harrier.
I'm trying to teach her to walk with the gentle leader.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder if it's typical that I have to pull her each time to get her started again, and then she stops and, you know, tries to get the lead off her nose, and then I pull her again. We walked about a quarter of a mile today, but it took about an hour.
Did you watch the DVD that came with the gentle leader?
I did.
Okay, good.
Everything's in fact, the person who sold it to me used to teach people how to use these things, and I've checked the fitting, and it's absolutely right. So it seems to me that these harriers are very stubborn dogs. So I'm not too surprised, but I just wonder if you had any suggestions.
This is very common for some dogs to react this way to the gentle leader. And she cannot get that off her nose, because once she does, she'll never stop trying. So distract her when she stops and she paws at her nose.
I yank her every time she does.
No. Don't yank her. Don't do that.
No.
You want to distract her.
Well, you want to pull up her nose from what she's doing.
Yeah, but don't do it.
That's what you do. You pull up her nose. That's how the thing works.
But that in that aspect, you're correct. But you're still teaching her how to wear it. So what I want you to distract her with is a food, a treat, so she doesn't think about the thing on her nose, and she's thinking about you instead. So don't. I know what you're saying about, and it's not yanking, though. It's a steady pulling motion, so you've got to do it. I think I always tell people this: watch the DVD and then watch it a second time.
I've watched it 3 times. I'm sure I know what it's supposed to do, but I'm sure she knows what she's supposed to do. Well, first of all, when my husband first put it on her, she got it off her nose, and that's the problem.
Yeah. And bear in mind, she's only 12 weeks old, so she doesn't know what she's supposed to be doing.
And that's probably one of the first kind of harness or leads you've had on her, right? And she's just not used to it. It wouldn't matter. You could put a collar on her and probably get the same reaction.
All right. Thanks for the call. We're going to have to wrap up here. And we got some calls, a lot of talk about dogs and birds this hour. our guests for the monthly program, Jim Kuehl and Carol Lindholm from the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. Thanks for coming in, and we'll see you again in a month, or hear you again in a month.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. It's 1:52 Central Time, and closing numbers should be in from Chicago and Kansas City, and we'll turn to Todd Gleason.
It was an ugly day in Chicago today. Weather-wise, not so great either, I suppose, but if you wanted the markets to go higher, an awful lot of red there. In fact, all red across the grains and the oilseeds. Futures were sharply lower in the bean pit, down 33 cents on the November contract. Corn down 6 to 7 cents for the day. Wheat futures were lower as well. We'll start there, as we always do. December contract to $4.54 high today for the soft red, and the low at 4.39 1/4, with the settlement price 11.5 cents lower at $4.41 1/4. March futures 4.73 1/4 the high, the low at 59. Settlement price for the soft red at 4.60 3/4. March contract in the May 4.83 the high, the low at 72. Settlement price at 4.73 1/2 down 11 1/4. July futures, that's the harvest month for next year, in the wheat, $4.97 1/2 the high, the low at 4.83 3/4. Settlement price at $4.85 1/2 down 11 1/4. From the Kansas City Board of Trade, nearby December futures for the hard red down 10 cents at $4.59 1/2. From the corn pit back in Chicago now, 7 cents lower, 3.40 1/2 the high, low at 3.31 3/4. Settlement price $3.33 1/2 down 7 cents. March contract 3.53 1/4 the high, the low at 3.44 1/2. March corn settled 3.46 1/2 down 6 3/4. And the May futures, 3.62, the high, the low at 53 3/4. Settlement price at $3.55 1/2 down 6 1/2 cents. July, 3.70, the high, the low at 62. Settlement price at 3.63 3/4 down 6 1/2. In September, 3.77 3/4, the high, the low at 3.70 1/4. Settlement price at 3.72 1/4 down 6 1/4 cents. December oats for the day, 2.20 1/2 down 3 1/2. The March there, 2.34 down 3 1/2 as well. Soy complex now. November beans leading the pack lower today, down 33 cents in the nearby contract. That November harvest month, a $9.18 top, the bottom at $8.85, and it settled on the low at $8.85, down 33 in the November soybeans. January futures, 9.24 1/4 the high, the low at 8.92, settled on the low at 8.92, down 32 1/4. And the March contract, 9.24 1/2 the high, the low at 8.95 1/2, settlement price at 8.95 1/4. That can't be right. They've got to be swapped, or 8.95 1/4 is the low as well, but it's down 29 1/2. On its settlement price one way or the other in the March soybeans. May contract, 9.20, the high, the low at 8.94. Settlement price at 8.93 1/2, down 27 1/4. And July futures, 9.21, the high, the low at 8.95. Settlement price, $8.96, down 25 1/2. And next year's November soybeans, $9.05, the high, the low at 8.85. Settlement price, $8.86 3/4 of a cent, down 16 3/4. October soybean meal, 284.40, the high, The low at 272.30, settlement price at $272 even, down $12.70. December futures 280.60, the high, the low at 267.50. Settlement price at 267.80, down $13. October soybean oil 34.23, the high, the low at 33.45. Settlement price at 33.73, down 52. And the December futures 34.57, the high, the low at 33.79. Settlement price for the December soybean oil, $34.07, down 52 on the afternoon. From the livestock side at the Mercantile Exchange, nearby contract in the live cattle, October futures, $1.15 lower, $84.10, the high price for the day. The low at $82.90, settlement price at $82.95 for 100 pounds. Live cattle settled that October contract, down $1.15. December futures, 84.92 and a half, the high, the low at 83.90, settlement price at $84, down 97 and a half cents. In February, 85.40, the high, low at 84.50, settlement price at 84.52 and a half, down 80 cents. In the April, 87.42 and a half, the high, the low at 86.55, settlement price at 86.62 and a half, down 85 cents. October feeder cattle, 94.60, the high, the low at 93.55. Settlement price at $93.55, down $1.40. In the November's, $94.70. The high, the low at $93.55. Settlement price $93.57.5, down $1.35. January futures, $1.20 lower at $95.75. The high, low at $94.65. Settled $94.67.5, down $1.20. In the March feeders, $96.50. The high, the low there at $95.80. Settlement price at $95.85, down a dollar even. October lean hog futures $49.70, the high, the low at $49.15. Settled $49.25, down 17 and a half. December futures for the hogs $49.20, the high, the low at $48.50. Settlement price $48.55, down 7 and a half. February's $56.42 and a half, the high, the low at $55.80. Settlement price at $55.87.5, down 15 cents. And April contract, $61.50 the high, the low at $60.80. Settlement price for the April lean hogs at $60.95, down 22.5 cents on the afternoon. Pork bellies now nearby contract, February, $80.95 the high, the low at its $79.65. Settlement price, $79.65, down on its low, $1.60 lower. And the March contract down $1.60, finished at $78.40. During the closing market report this afternoon, we'll talk with Mike Zuzlow. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. That's in Lafayette, Indiana. He always joins us on a Friday afternoon. Later in that program, we'll check in on the cash grain market. And along the way, we'll hear from Chris Hurt, Purdue Extension Ag Economist. He'll help us take a look at how H1N1 has impacted the pork industry. That all comes up during the closing market report at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock. Today.
Support comes from the Westchester Group, specializing in land auctions for farmland, timberland, and recreational land. More information on upcoming auctions is available online at westchester-auctions.com.
Here's what some of the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil trading at $70.82 a barrel is up 21 cents. That's a settlement price. The ethanol at $1.87.6. 4.5 cents higher. Gold at $1,003.20, $3.70 higher on its settlement. The Dow now at 9,510. It's up $1.82 on the afternoon. That's just about 1 point, really. Not about $1.982, but just 1 point for the Dow higher on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like today in Illinois and Indiana, as it's prepared by our own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser. For tonight, in north-central sections of the two-state region, mostly cloudy, scattered showers in the south, partly to mostly cloudy. Lows this evening between 43 and 49 tomorrow. In the north, cloudy, cool, some showers in central sections in southeastern Indiana. Mostly cloudy, a few widely scattered showers in southern Illinois and southwestern Indiana. Mostly sunny. Highs tomorrow will range from 52 in northwestern Illinois to 68 in the far south. Coming up on the top of the hour, 2 o'clock, straight up, you're listening to WILL 580.